Okay, so we are in Paraktet, Shmuel Paraktet, chapter 9. Are you there?
Oh, thank you.
We started this last week. We're now in a new phase, right? The nation demanded a king in Paraktet in chapter 8. We talked about what was wrong with the request, God's decision to go along with the request. And we started talking about the king who's going to be selected, which is, of course, Shaul. And we were surprised to find that he's from the tribe of Binyamin. Why are we taking someone from Binyamin? If Yaakov said, Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda, leadership doesn't leave Yehuda. And in fact, David says multiple times that Hashem has chosen Yehuda, and he's chosen his family within Yehuda, and he's chosen him, and it's going to be with his heirs, and so forth. And we gave two different explanations. Ramban, who said, you're right, it was always meant for Yehuda, and Shaul is simply a reaction to the people's request. Since they didn't request properly, so Hashem says, fine, so I'll give you somebody who's not going to endure, who's not going to last. And we were surprised, because the pasuk we saw from Perek Yud-Gimel, chapter 13, sentence 13, is going to say that had you not made a mistake, Shaul, you could have been king forever.
Right.
So Ramban says, yeah, sort of. You could have been king for a long time, you would have been king under part of the population, you would have been king under the Davidic king. We'll find a position for you, don't worry about it. But no, it's got to be Yehuda. That was Ramban's position. Was Abarbanel said, no, monarchy is tied ultimately to David, not to Yehuda. Meaning, what Yaakov was saying is that Yehuda will be the leader among the Shvatim, among the tribes, but not that they will necessarily be royal. And so Shaul could have, in fact, been king in an ongoing way, lost the Malchus, it went to David, and David was so great, which we'll have to learn about as we get to him in Shmuel, but David was so great that Hashem said, this is the one I want, and I'm going to take his descendants afterwards. That was Abarbanel's way of looking at it. So now, we actually have to meet Shaul, and we read the opening psukim at the end last time, but we had a lot of questions. So let's go back to chapter 9, sentences 1 and 2, the introduction to Shaul. Vayi ish mi Binyamin. Right? There was a man from Binyamin, and his name is Kish, son of Aviel, son of Tzror, son of Becharat, son of Afiach, of Binyamin, Gibor Chayil. And we took Gibor Chayil to be a reference back to Kish, right? The one who was named in the beginning of the sentence. I mean, Shaul does not appear in this sentence. Kish is the starting point. So Kish is a Gibor Chayil. We said we need to look at that more to explain what Gibor Chayil might actually mean. Velo hayavein, but this fellow Kish has a son, Ushmo Shaul, and his name is Shaul. He is Bachur Vatov. Those are hard to translate. I mean, Tov means good. Bachur can be taken in a couple of different ways. You have different translations around the table. Art Scroll translation says what for Bachur?
Young man.
Exceptional.
Distinguished.
Distinguished. You have choice in that one.
Young.
I've
got choice and
Interesting.
Young.
Interesting. Choice and young.
Yeah.
How do you have
young
both?
Young.
Wait, stop.
Young.
How do you have choice and young?
Shaul, a choice young man,
yeah,
and handsome.
And mine says, and good.
That's bizarre. No, good luck. But okay, so they're taking Bahur and translating as choice and young. That makes no sense. The Bahur is either choice or young. Right? Bahur is a term we use for a young man. Bahur, like Livchor, to choose, is somebody who is choice. You cannot be choice and young as Bahur. I'm sorry, that's not allowed. I'm not happy with the court. Yeah, I mean, they're trying to be on both sides. But we're not done. Ve'en ish mi b'nei Yisrael tov mi menu. There's nobody better than him. Mishichmo v'mala gavoa mikol ha'am. From shoulders and up, he is taller than anybody else, because apparently there's a height requirement now for this position. You may not ride this ride unless you are over this point.
He's really from much taller.
Yeah,
back to his legs.
He could be short to the shoulder, and that huge head.
Yes, he's at Easter Island. He's an Easter Island statue.
Not taller.
Higher. That doesn't help me.
He's just like loftier, not loftier.
That's right. That's
the main side, but this is from here up, means that he's
a certain carriage.
Better.
Oh, his mind is better. Okay. So I want to tackle this bit by bit. We already asked the questions last time that you have to ask here, which is, first of all, why are you giving me all these generations in the first pasuk? What's your point? What does Gibor Chayil mean here? What does Tov mean here? When you say that he was good and better than anybody, does it at horseshoes? Like, what in what way was he better than anybody? And why do I care how tall he was? So there's a lot to say on this, and this is fascinating. But first of all, let's go back to the Yichus, this list of generations, and what this is trying to do. So the truth is, we find others in Tanakh who are named with multiple generations, and it's meant to convey a message about their ancestry. Who in Tanakh, don't look at the sheet first, who in Tanakh first is named with a bunch of generations? Mordechai? Okay, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish. That's, you've got a few generations there. Who else?
So when we were listening, and we got to Pinchas again. No, this wasn't somebody. Didn't we get all the way back to Pinchas?
Not that I can recall.
In the
Navi,
they were reading it. I don't. We said Abraham.
Sorry, Abraham. Nope. So on the positive side, you have the following people. I mean, this is not an all-included list. Yes, Korach is one of those. Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehat, Ben Levi.
Oh, the guy who took from the Cherem. Is he listed?
Yes. Achan is on the negative side as well. Achan, Ben Karmi, Ben Zabdi, Ben Zerach, Lemate Yehuda is the one who takes from the spoils of the war with Yericho. So we've got two negatives, Korach and Achan. On the positive side, two people are in charge of building the Mishkan. One is Ahaliyah from the tribe of Dan, but the other one is Bitzalel, Ben Uri, Ben Hur, Lamate Yehuda. Right? That's a positive one. Then you have Pinchas himself. Pinchas, maybe that's what you were thinking of. Pinchas Ben Elazar, Ben Aharon HaKohen. Right? And the best one is on your sheet, because I couldn't resist bringing it. Look at source number 3. Elkanah ben Tohu ben Zuf. You're right. We had Elkanah was another positive one. Right? Elkanah in the beginning of Shmuel. That's a good one. But take a look at number 3. He takes the cake. Ezra HaSofer. V'achar hadvim ha'ele b'malchut artachshasta melech paras. Right? After the first events in Ezra, the first Aliyah was Sheshbatzar and so on, Ezra ben Sariah, ben Azariah, ben Chilkiah, ben Shalom, ben Sadok, ben Achituv, ben Amariah, ben Azariah, ben Merayot, ben Zerachiah, ben Uzi, ben Buki, ben Avishua, ben Pinchas, ben Elazar, ben Aaron, Akoin, Harosh. Who? Ezra, Allah, mi Bavel. Who's so fair, my hair? Yeah.
Wow.
Seriously, 50 generations.
Wow.
Parenthetically, they're actually skipping some. Wow. The Mepharshim, the commentaries tend to assume they're skipping some because this would have been a period of 1,000 years.
So it's more than 15.
Yeah, it's got to be more than 15 generations. Mm-hmm. We would think. So but that's its own point. But the question is, so what are we supposed to take from all of this? The fact that you're listing sometimes good people, sometimes bad people, with generations of ancestry has to mean something. So I think what it means overall, and we can show in the cases we've described, that you list ancestry in order to identify influences on the person, as well as a sense of rootedness. This is where they come from. This is now their identity. Take a look on your sheet at source number 1, please. Bitzalel. Medrash in Shmos Rabbah talks about the lineage. Bashar Sha'asu Yisrael Ha'egel. At the time when the Jews made the golden calf, Amad Chur v'nasa nafsho al HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chur stood up and gave his life for God. And what it's talking about is a problem in Parshas Kisisa. The problem in Parshas Kisisa, which people somehow miss, is the fact that when the Jews realize Moshe is not coming back, right? Moshe's gone, we don't know what's happened to him. Who do they go to for help? Aharon. Right. But at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, when Moshe went up the mountain, he told them, if there are any issues, you should go to Aharon and Hur. And Hur is just not there. It's strange. He's just not there. No, there's no mention of the people going to him. There's no mention of him dealing with it. Who is this man, and why don't I know anything about him? And the Medrash suggests that the answer is that Hur opposed the Egel, and they killed him. Which is brought to explain, because the pasuk says, "Vayar Aharon, Aharon saw, And he told them, okay, this is what we're going to do. What was it that Aaron saw? The answer is he saw who were killed. And he said, okay, I'm going to try a different strategy. But the point is that this Medrash is picking up on is Hur gives up his life. Amar lo, and God says to him, Chayecha, by your life, literally. Kol banim hayotzim mimcha ani megadlam shem tov ba'olam. I am going to give all your descendants a great name in this world. And so we get Reu Karashem b'shem Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. He calls the name Bezalel, who is the grandson of Hur. And by Malayo Suruach Elokim, Hashem filled him with the Spirit of God. In other words, Bezalel gets his position because of his ancestor Hur. That's what gives him this Ruach Elohim. There's more to be said on this. I did a shiur on Midrash Yom Rishon about 5 years ago on Bezalel. There's more to be said about how Bezalel gets his power. But the limited piece that we need right now is just that when you're listing the lineage, it's saying, it's not just random, it's there's a connection here. You want to know why Bezalel gets to be Bezalel? It's because Hur was Hur.
But he was also talented to be able to do it.
By Malayo Simruach Elohim, Hashem gave him. It's a very interesting point that Ezi is raising, because some of the psukim sound like they have traits of their own, and some of the psukim sound like God gives it to them, and the answer is a hybrid. It's a combination of both. But that's one example. What about Pinchas? So with Pinchas, it emphasizes his lineage in order to defend his righteousness. The story with Pinchas, of course, is that he kills Zimri, right? When the Jewish men are getting involved with the women of Midian and Moab. But there's a whole backstory which the Gemara sees happening here. Because the Jewish men got involved with the women of Midian and Moab. Who was it who in the Chumash married? What Jew married a Midianite? Moshe marries Tzipora, who is from Midian. And so the Gemara puts it as Moshe being unable to act because Zimri, the leader of this, whatever you want to call it, turns to him and says, well, you married a Midianite. Who are you to talk? Right? Take a look. It's verse number 2. Amarlo ben Amram. Zimri says to Moshe, son of Amram, Zuasura umuteres. Is this one, Kazbi Batsur, the Midianite, is she permitted or prohibited? Asura, and if you're going to tell me she's off limits, then Bas Yisro mi tiralach will allow you to marry the daughter of Yisro.
It was before the Torah.
And that's one answer. Bikshu malachi ashar, that's not really his point, you know. Yeah. I mean, this is rabble rousing. Yeah. So, bikshu malachi ashar is ledochvo. So the angels want to shove him, meaning Pinchas. They want to say, who are you to get up and kill somebody? Amar lahen. And Hashem says to the malachim, hanichu lo lifim bi. Kanoi ben Kanoihu. He is a zealot, son of a zealot. Meshiv Chema ben Meshiv Chemahu. He is a calmer of divine rage, son of a calmer of divine rage. Meaning he is the son of Elazar, the son of Aharon. Remember that Aharon and Levi in general are the ones who are called to execute the people who are involved in the golden calf. They are, you know, and of course if you go back further, you go back to Levi. Right, and Levi being, you know, the one who struck the city of Shechem, may have been the one who also was involved in the sale of Yosef. Shimon and Levi being the ones not to sell, the ones who set to kill Yosef. So this is his bloodline. He is somebody who has it in him to act out in this way. And it's Chilush Shvatim Avazinov. So first of all, it's giving you a source for his zealotry. But continue. The tribes are making fun of him. Ra'isim ben Puti Zesha Pite Mavi Imo Agalam Lavodazara. You know, Pinchas is the son of Elazar. Elazar married one of the daughters of Yisro also. So that means his grandfather was Yisro, who was the priest for Avodazara in Midian. Look at him. He's standing up here and he's gonna do this. Vaharag Nasi Shevim Yisrael, and now he executes the head of a tribe. So therefore, Bahakasa v'yichso, the Pasa comes along and it establishes his lineage. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen. It's defending his righteousness. It's saying, don't look at him as some outsider or some upstart. He is the son of Elazar. He is the grandson of Aharon HaKohen. So you list the lineage to say these are their influences and this is their identity. And the same thing is true for Ezra. If you learn Sefer Ezra, which every Jew should do at least once, if you learn Sefer Ezra, you see that much of Sefer Ezra, as well as Nehemiah, which is just, you know, Ezra part 2, is about lineage. Over and over again, there are censuses of the tribes, of who came from which one, and who was there because of this. and where they lived and which cities they had come from. There are a lot of name lists throughout the Sefer for a variety of reasons. But what you see in part is an attempt to emphasize lineage and roots in the Jewish nation in the book as a whole. And so we're going to get these 15 generations for Ezra, because he's going to be their major religious leader to establish him and his legitimacy. That's on the positive side. But it's also on the negative side. Korah, Yitzhar Kahat, is a statement of, Levi also, is a statement of, this is where the mutineer gets it from. Which is why, take a look at source number 4, the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah says, you know, it stops short of Yaakov. Stops at Levi. Why? So the truth is, if I didn't have a pasuk to support this, I would have just said, because it always stops short of Yaakov. How many times does it actually say Ben Yaakov in any of these lineages?
We know, but that everybody came from Yaakov.
Yeah,
all the tribes.
Correct. But the Medrash picks up on Yaakov's, I don't want to call it a bracha, it's not quite a bracha, to Shimon and Levi. He says of them, Shimon v'Levi achem klei chamas mecherotehem. The tools of their trade, so to speak, are weapons. They are violent people. And then he says, Bisodam al tavo nafshi. I don't want to be involved. My desire is not in their secrets. Ubikahalam al techad kivodi. And in their gathering, al techad kivodi. So the word techad is an odd word. And they take techad here in the Medrash to mean to be united, like yachad. My kavod should not be united with their group. What does that mean?
Don't list my name.
When Korach gets his group together because they want to fight with Moshe, I don't want my name involved with that. That's not me. And then so it says, and it doesn't say Ben Yaakov. Stops short of Yaakov. That's one example. And then the other one is the case that Alina mentioned with Achan, who took the spoils. And again, he's identified as Achan ben Karmi ben Zabdi ben Zerach from the tribe of Yehuda. So look at the Medrash. This is actually a longer Medrash that has others involved also, but I just chose the Achan piece. Genailo, genailo avivu mishpachto, genailo shevet shiyazi imenu. Disgrace for him, disgrace for his father, disgrace for his family, disgrace for his tribe. All of them because of what he did. So we establish a sense of responsibility and a sense of influence through the generations when we list Yichus. And so for that reason, it makes sense that we introduce Shaul this way. You want to know who this Shaul is? Look at Kish and look at his predecessors. So I think for that reason it makes sense, but I think there's an added element. Take a look at number 6, please. This should be familiar because we looked at it a lot in the previous parak when we talked about the decision to have a king. Look at the command. Som tasim alecha melech asher yivchar Hashem elokecha bo. Choose a king Hashem, well, place a king Hashem will choose. Mikerev achecha tasim alecha melech. Take a king who is from your brethren. Lo suchal aseis alecha ish nachri. Not a foreigner. Don't take some stranger. It has to be somebody from you. And that could be because they are rooted in the nation or because they have the traits that we want them to have, but it has to be Mikerev Achecha, and that's what you're identifying. This is somebody who is Mikerev Achecha. He is one of you. Shaul has that identity, and that fits a Gemara in Megillah in source number 7. The Gemara there talks about how sometimes we list a Navi or we list somebody in the Torah and we list their other family members and we don't know anything about them. Yeah, what do we know about any of these people in the line? And the answer is, we're going to say something about Aviel shortly, and that's basically it. The rest of them are not people, as I can recall, who figure into anything in Tanakh. But take a look at number 7. The Gemara says, Kol shemasav umaseav osav stumin. If his deeds and the deeds of his ancestors are unknown, we don't have any particular knowledge about them. And then the text goes out of its way with one of them to say something nice. This is a good one. Kigon, for example, Devar Hashem Asher Hayal Tzfanya ben Kushi ben Gedalia, the introduction of the prophet Tzfanya. right? Tzifanya is in Treyasar, the 12 smaller books of Navi, also worth reading. But it begins, the word of Hashem to Tzifanya, son of Cushi, son of Gedaliah. I don't know who any of them are. This is not Gedaliah as in the governor Gedaliah. This is somebody else named Gedaliah. So I know, though, that Tzifanya is a Navi, which makes him good. So therefore, Biyadushu Tzadik Ben Tzadik. Once you tell me that one of them in the line was good, I can assume the rest of them are good. And if one of them is bad, then I also assume the rest of the line is bad, and they give you the example of the murderer of Gedaliah, Yishmael ben Netanya ben Elishama. So we say that he's bad, then the rest of the line was bad as well. So in these cases, the last one mentioned is the good slash bad one, and that reflects on the ancestry. And now I'll come back to the question that Linda led to, which is the question of, so do we know anything about any of them? And the only one we have anything to help with is, in fact, this Aviel. The commentators go on at length about the sum of them, but I just chose you the Yerushalmi, which addresses it in one way, and I didn't want to get into the headaches. One of the challenges we're going to have, God willing, we get that far, with David HaMelech, is some of the people who are at his side are somehow related to other people at his side in very Toronto ways. You'll see what I mean when we get there. But like, it becomes very confusing about who Tsuria is and how it is that Tsuria has a whole bunch of kids who are generals. But take a look at number 8, and you'll see one piece of what's coming down the pike. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Reish Lakish said, Shaul lo zachalim lucha ela al yedei shaya zikeno madlik ner larabim nikra shemo ner. He says, you want to know why Shaul gains monarchy? Because his grandfather lit lamps for the public. He illuminated the streets for people. Such that he was called Ner, lamp. Where do you get that from? Kasevechad Omer, because one text says, this is in Divrei Hayamim, V'ner holidet Kish. That Kish has a father by the name of Ner. But our text says that Kish's father is Aviel. So is he Ner, or is he Aviel? Valo Aviel Yashmo. His name was Aviel, not Ner. Ela al yedei shaya zekeino madlik Ner l'rabim nikra shemo Ner. And the answer is that his grandfather lit lamps for the public, meaning Shaul's grandfather lit lamps for the public, and therefore he was named Ner. His nickname was Ner. His nickname was the lamplighter.
Unless there was more than one Kish.
Right, so that's another possibility, except that it doesn't fit with the idea that in Divrei Hayamim we're actually giving Shaul's lineage. It's Shaul, son of Kish, son of Ner. Yeah, that's the, and it actually is, again, the commentators make this even more complicated. I just chose not to go into it.
Avner was Avner ben Ner.
Right, so that's part, and that's part of what the commentators bring in that I didn't want to go into. You are opening a can of worms. We will have to get to it when we talk about Avner. But right now, I didn't think it was that necessary. But the other piece of this is, do you remember somebody else who was also named this way for lighting lamps?
Yes.
The wax.
Devorah.
Devorah
or her?
Yeah, well, that was the question. Devorah was identified as Eshet Lapidot. Right, Eshet Lapidot, a fiery woman perhaps, but one explanation was that either she or her husband was involved in making the wicks for the menorah. So we have that example. Yes,
if
correct.
Kish must be important then, if they named him also. Like, why did they just start off the whole parak saying, this is Shaul, the son of Kish, the son of Aviel? Like, why did they start off with Kish himself?
Right. So this is something that did we talk about this with Yishai and David or not? I talked about this somewhere, but I don't remember where. It's a really interesting thing that here we emphasize Kish and then say Kish has a son, Shaul. And similarly, when we get to David, we say there's this man Yishai, and he has a whole bunch of sons, and eventually we get to David. So, well, either that, or it's that they're young. They're young enough that they have not yet accomplished, and therefore we're starting from the family and the father, and then we'll get around to who they are. In the same way we do it with Moshe. I mean, with Moshe we're introduced with his birth, so it's kind of, you have to. But also, Ishmi, Beis Levi, and all that. And then we get to Moshe.
Do we know how
Moshe.
Shaul is at this point?
So there's a little bit of discussion of Shaul's age in Abarbanel. He talks about Shaul's age, because they're actually, it's going to come up a little bit further along, so maybe we'll hold the question. But his age is going to be an issue. Abarbanel talked about it when he was trying to figure out when the 20 years were, because he said that if you take the standard chronology that people use for Shmuel's life, that he lives to be 52 and so on, he's actually younger than Shaul. And it doesn't say Shmuel is younger than Shaul, and Shaul is being called Bahur, and Shmuel is being called Zakein.
Oh, right, we talked about that.
So I want to come back to Shaul's age eventually. He's not a little kid, but he is Bahur. Choice and young, apparently.
And handsome.
So the message of lineage is influences. The message of lineage is rootedness, and it makes sense to emphasize it when you're talking about royalty in particular. And here you see the good character idea highlighted by the Yerushalmi. Look who he comes from. He comes from somebody who went out of his way to illuminate the streets for people. But note, we aren't necessarily sold on Yichus. Jump ahead, please, to Perek Ted Zion, Pasuk Aleph. Who are we introducing there in Perek Ted Zion? Chapter 16, sentence 1. Right. What's going to happen in chapter 16? We're going to pick David, right? Shmuel goes to pick a son of Yishai as the next king. Do we know who Yishai came from? Mm-hmm. We don't get any lineage there.
He's from Beit Lechem.
Yeah, he's from Beit Lechem. That's it. So we introduce David, who is from Royal Yehuda, without any fanfare. We don't list a whole bunch of generations there. Not only that, that's it for all we have to see there. But take a look back at your sheet now, please, at source number 9. Abarbanel notes that we're picking somebody in Shaul from Binyamin. We already talked about this a little bit last week, about Binyamin being a very odd choice for a king. When we last met Binyamin, granted it wasn't necessarily the chronological end of Sefer Shoftim, but it was the physical end of Sefer Shoftim, it was Pilegesh B'Givan. You had a war going between Binyamin and everybody else, and Binyamin was in the wrong.
Yeah.
That was very clear. Whatever else everybody else did, and Ramban, and the whole thing that we discussed about why Binyamin reacted the way they did, bottom line is they're wrong. So take a look at source number 9. The Asher Odetz Lee, Abarbanel says, I have another idea for why it's Binyamin. God wanted it to be from Binyamin, l'fishahaya shivto nivzem me'od, u'mitma'et b'sibat pilegesh b'giv'ah. His tribe was very lowly, and was reduced as a result of the story of Pilegesh Begiv'ah, that concubine I give a story, that horrific event. Ukmosh Amar Shaul to Shmuel, as in fact Shaul would say to Shmuel, when Shmuel tries to make Shaul the king, he says, who, me? Hello, Benyamin Anochi. I am from Binyamin, Miktanei Shibtei Yisrael, from the smallest of the tribes. V'liyas Hashem Yisbarach Mekim Me'afar Dal V'kisei Kavod Yanchilei. And Hashem elevates the pauper. Hashem gives them a seat of honor, which was, of course, Hannah's song. That's what he's quoting. Nasan Amalchus L'Shafal Shebachol HaShvatim. Hashem Davka, Hashem specifically gives the monarchy to the smallest of the tribes, to the most degraded of the tribes. And the point is, don't get ahead of yourself, Shaul. Which is interesting, also, because it fits other elements within Shaul's story. But the idea here is, don't, you know, put the brakes on this Yichus thing, on this lineage thing. He chooses Binyamin. He didn't go for the one who had the best lineage of the entire nation. He may be tall.
Because they'll be modest?
Sorry?
Because they'll be modest because they are lowly.
Exactly. The Gemara talks about Shaul having kupash al shratzim taloy v'tzavaro, literally a box of creepy crawly creatures around his neck, the equivalent of a skeleton in the closet. He has something to be embarrassed about.
Shaul?
All right, so it's David who has that. Shaul does not, is in that Gemara. But we're seeing here some element of it. So we're introduced with lineage. We put some stock in it. My favorite is always the line that I think gets attributed to Seneca, although it feels like a Jewish line. The line about lineage this part isn't Seneca, this part is somebody else, but Seneca said something else that I'm forgetting now about lineage. But I have to send out what Seneca's quote was, because it was a really good one. Seneca the Roman, he had a great line about it. But the other line about lineage is that it's like a set of zeros. Right, you've heard that?
Mm-hmm.
It's lineage is like a set of zeros. You are the one. If you're at the head, then it all becomes meaningful. Right? If you're at the end, then it's worthless. I forget who said that. If you can find Seneca on lineage, let me know. Otherwise, I'll have to send it out. He had a great line about lineage, and I'm just blanking on what it is. Okay. In any case, that's the lineage piece. But we have a whole bunch of other stuff here. We've got him being Bahur, Vatov, and all of that. We have his height. It's such an odd read. Yeah.
No, sorry. Okay, just came to this.
I saw it as like the opening sentence, like an epigraph ahead of a chapter in a book. Sorry. It's all right. That's okay. I'm sure I have it in my notes somewhere. But what are we supposed to do with these traits? So if we go trait by trait, we find each trait can be interpreted in different ways. The lineage one seems to be a spiritual one, right? That seems to be fairly clear. And if you take a look at the Malbim I brought you in source number 10, he's commenting on Gibor Chayil. And he says, Gibor Chayil, which may be translated as a warrior, we'll see. But he says, Ugvurat ha'av tolid gvura babein. If the father is mighty, the expectation is the son is going to be mighty. How many times in history has that not turned out to be true? Yeah. Understood.
Who was the one they wanted to give him the sword?
And he didn't want it.
Right, Gidon's son.
Gidon's son, yeah.
And, yeah, absolutely. But we're going to see in all of these, besides the Yichus one, that you can take them to be material, like physical, and kind of surprising as criteria for a king, or you could take them to be about character. You could read them either way. So we talk about Gibor Chayil. So the word Chayil, and we started on this a little bit last week, can mean a lot of different things. It shows up in many different ways in Tanakh. The first sentence that I gave you there, in source number 11, I gave you a bunch of psukim that invoke Chayil. So, Vayitein Yoav et Mispar Mifkad Ha'am El HaMelech. Yoav gives the king the census, right? This is the problematic census that David did. But if it's a military count, Vayi Yisrael Shmona Meos Elef Ish Chayil, and you have 800,000 Ish Chayil, Sholeif Cherev, Ish Chayil who wields swords. These are soldiers. It sounds like it's somebody of physical strength. Right? Chayil here sounds like strength. Then you get the next pasuk, which speaks about wealth. That's from Yirmiyahu. Chelcha ba'otzrotecha lavaz etein. Hashem says, I will give your chel, your chayil, and your otzarot, your storehouses, I will give them for being despoiled, taken away by the enemy. So it's wealth. So your first two psukim here that I brought are both about physical, material things. On the other hand, the third pasuk that I brought you there is when Moshe is going to pick judges, and he's told what he should look for. Ve'ata techezemi kol ha'am, identify from the nation anshei chayil. Yirei Elokim anshei emet sonei batza. Anshei chayil is the first trait on the list. Does that mean people of physical strength and wealth? Could be. But Ibn Ezra, in source number 12, says, you know what Anshe Chayil is? Sheyesh lahem koach lisbol. They have strength of character. They can deal with stuff. They will suffer. Endure. Well, they can endure. And that also fits a comment by Radak as well as Ralbag on my fourth pasuk in number 11. I realize we're jumping back and forth. I hope it can be sustained here. Odenu medaber. Yoav was speaking. Vihine Yonatan ben Eviatar Kohen ba. Along came Yonatan, son of Eviatar the Kohen Gadol. Vayomer Adoniyahu, and Adoniyahu said, Bo, come forward. Ki ish chayil ato v'tov tevaser. You are an ish chayil, and you will give good news. What is an ish chayil? 13. Radak says, and Rabag echoes it. Klomer Adam zariz v'tov. Energetic and good. These are good qualities. This speaks of somebody of good character. And the last pasuk I give you in 11, Kol Eila Mibnei Oved Edom. Oved Edom was a good guy. All of these were the sons of Oved Edom. Hema Ubnehem Va'achehem Ish Chayil Bakoach La'avoda. Oved Edom was a man of Chayil with strength to work. And if you take a look at, where did I bring it? In number 14, Oved Edom is identified as, or his sons are identified as Ish Chayil, What does Rashi say? Lo b'koach v'lo b'milchama. Not that he's a person of strength or war. Ela ka'adam shomer la ploni chashuv. But someone of whom you would say this is an important person, just like Boaz is identified as Ish Gibor Chayil, it means someone who is respected. And last week I mentioned, of course, Rus is the one who is identified in Tanakh as Eshet Chayil. The idea that I take to encapsulate it as person of substance, person of significance, of standing, whether it's in the material realm or it's in the realm of character, and I think that any of them could be what is meant here. When we are told that Kish is Gibor Chayil, you could read that as warrior. After all, the word Gibor is often strength related, but you could read it as a person with strong character, as we saw already in Ibn Ezra, as we saw in Radak, you know, and that kind of message. Both of them fit. Sandy, you were going to say? Okay. So Gibor Chayil suggests strength of some kind. Then you get Bachur. And I don't know what to do with Bachur. Look on your sheet.
Well, Gibor Chayil was about his father.
Yes, well, that's his father, with the assumption that he's going to inherit it. But yes. Look at Bachur. So Abarbanel and Malbim, in source number 15, I brought you Abarbanel, say that it means youth. I'm not going into the rest of Abarbanel's comment yet, because we have to come back to it. We're not ready for it yet. But you already see in the beginning of it that he is Bachur, Bizman Tigborat Yetzirah. He was young at the stage when the Yetzirah is powerful, but it's Bachur means that he is young, according to Abarbanel. Mitzudat David, number 16, on Bachur Vatov, says Bachur means he is choice in his deeds. He's a good person. It's about his character. And then you get the word Tov. And Tov could also go both ways. Tov could be material. He's good looking. I think we've heard that in some of the commentaries there. Not only that, the Yerushalmi says, Tov actually refers to his height. Take a look at source number 17. Vein ish mibnei Yisrael Tov mimenu. No one was more Tov than Shaul. Yachol bakol. I might think that that means that he was the best in everything. No, it's height specific. That he was taller than everybody else. Now that's on the second appearance of the word Tov, not on the first appearance of the word Tov. Nonetheless, it sounds like height really does matter. That's the message that you're getting. And then at the same time, you have Radak in number 18, who says Tov, Pirish Tov, Bitoar Uvamareh. Tov means good looking.
So if you have all of these, jumping the gun a bit here, but if you have all of these descriptive words that can both mean something physical and can mean something about your character, then you just win-win situation. He's just this all-around good guy, and they specifically use those words to say he was good both physically and...
Maybe. I have a particular idea that I'm building towards with it. Eddie.
In here, the way the English is explained, I'm looking at it in a different direction. It says, a choice young man and a goodly, and there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he.
Okay, what is goodly?
From his shoulders and upward, he was higher than any of the people. And I'm thinking that he was a good person, and shoulder up, meaning he had a good head on his shoulders.
We're not there yet. We're not there yet. We're getting there. We're just not there yet. Hang on. But I just want to show you first, go back to that Abarbanel now, because he explains this Bachur Vatov in a very interesting way in source number 15. Yeah, go back to 15. We said Bachur, according to Abarbanel, meant young. Abarbanel believes that Tov means that he behaves well. And look what he does with it. Im heyoso bachur bizman tigboras hayetzahara. He was young, at the stage in life when the Yetzirah is most powerful. Hayatov im Hashem bim anashim. And yet, at the same time, he was good with God and good with man. He had himself under control. Ubazei gidlo shalo hayanim shachlat haavosav. Meaning, he doesn't go after his desires. Ad shehayid olav shalo hayav ibnei Yisrael ish tov mimenu. Such that it says, there was no man in Israel who was better than him. Meaning, no ish. He was bachur, he was young. And at a young age, I would have expected him to be a little out of control. And yet he was better than all the mature men in the nation. That's why he underlines the word man. Not only was there no youth who was better than him, but even somebody who was already mature in years, there was nobody who was better and more complete than he was. So Abarbanel reads Tov not being about how he looks, but about how he behaves. And then we get to Gavoa Mikol Ha'am. So Abarbanel reads it very simply and says, yeah, this is tall. That's what it means. Take a look at number 19. Abarbanel has four reasons why Shaul is selected, and his fourth is Hasiba Revi'it Leyovyo Utiferes Toaro, his beauty, his splendid appearance. Va'alav Amar Mishichmo Vamala Gavoa Mikol Ha'am. He is taller than all of them from his shoulders and up. Sheminona Ela Adnus. The type of person that is attractive for putting him in charge. V'Toaro Yoral Memshala. His appearance indicated power. You may not like it, but the reality is that all the studies show people who are taller earn higher salaries. It's the way it is. So that's the answer. The answer is either be tall or marry tall. But that's Abarbanel's read, and
you could
read it as character, right? You could read it as character if you had to, right? Like Eti says. Maybe it means that, you know, and I think Debbie had said also, his brain is more elevated, his thoughts are loftier, and you could, but it doesn't sound like it. It really doesn't. You're so specific, shoulders and up. But let me ask you, now that we've seen that all of these traits lead in ambiguous directions, height, I think, really does seem to go a certain direction. But in general, other than the height one, why might it be intentionally vague? I think it's intentional. I don't think it's an accident.
It's vague what?
In terms of the fact that you could read this as being all material, or you could read it as being about character. Why are the psukim written that way? We have no problem. We know exactly how to define people who are righteous. Tanakh has a lot of experience describing righteous people. Tanakh has a lot of experience describing attractive people, right? You could have just said, "You fate tower, be fame arat." We did it with Rachel. We did it with Yosef. We do it with David. Yeah. Why is this in a vague way?
Maybe it's first king, and therefore they don't know which way. In other words, he's young. Will he mature in the right way?
So he's not yet there. Okay.
Or then he could get there.
He could get there. Yeah.
He gets some room to grow in either way and to fail.
So, again, we're talking then about routes that could take him somewhere, one sort of positive or somewhere negative. Could be. I would go back to what we said in Perikhet, in chapter 8. We said that the goal that God has here, right? We were puzzled. If we don't like the people's request for a king, and Shmuel made it clear, and Hashem made it even more clear, right? Hashem said, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. Join the club. Right? The next sentence should have been, so don't give them what they're asking for. Don't give them a king. But Hashem said, no, they're going to have a king, all in good time. Why does Hashem go along with it? And our answer was that Hashem says, I'm going to give them a king, but it's going to be someone who is going to answer to me. Not like what they want. The king is going to make up the rules, but he's going to have to follow what I say. And if he doesn't, he's going to lose the throne. So Hashem says, I'm going to give you a king as you request, but it's going to be on my terms. And I wonder if that isn't what's happening here. On the one hand, the people are going to look at this person and think, this is what we wanted. He's attractive, and he's tall, and he's young, everything that we want to have to impress the neighbors. And Hashem is thinking, he is choice, and he is good, and he is righteous, and he's, you know, elevated and lofty above everybody else. You follow? I think it's deliberate that there's ambiguity. Yeah. I think that's the point. The people are going to read this one way, and Hashem is reading it a different way. I haven't seen that anywhere, but I think that's Pshat. I think that's what's going on.
Either way, it makes it sound like he's the ideal in everyone's eyes, and yet, unfortunately...
Unfortunately, it doesn't work.
That would make a lot of sense if he was the ultimate...
Yeah. Right.
But I believe that his sin was a lot less than David's sin.
Well, we haven't gotten anywhere yet. We don't know anything yet. He hasn't even been selected yet.
Yeah.
Okay, we're at the beginning of the story.
It's just a little bit... I really like what you just said, and it makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, it's a little bit puzzling that, Hashem would not have wanted to make this a teaching moment and to say, these are the qualities I choose for, you know, not in other words, not let them think that it's a Barack Obama, you know,
well,
they have done
what would it,
who's
would
handsome and young and dynamic and everything, but to kind of get the word back that I have found this person to be of a good heart and a strong, energetic, you know.
What would have happened? Play it out. Hashem chooses a king for them who is the opposite of what they think they want. Right?
Well, haven't said, nobody has said we want a bad guy, we want a self.
No. But Hashem picks them a king who's not impressive.
I didn't mean that he has to be not impressive, but I meant that at the same time, we could use, instead of using two words, we could use four words that made it clear that, yes, he's tall and he's good-looking and he's got a good heart and he's got good qualities and these things are important to the king.
I think Hashem wants the reader, though, to go through the same experience.
Right.
Of is he or isn't he? What is this? Is he what they wanted or is he what Hashem wanted?
Right.
I think the reader is meant to wrestle with that question. That's the way I look at it. Maybe it's a little bit too literary as a read, but I like it. But what we haven't yet answered and what we have to still address is that may be why Hashem thinks the people should have Shaul as king. He has traits of spiritual goodness for God, traits of material goodness that's going to satisfy the people. But what is it exactly in his spiritual traits that makes Hashem say, this is the one? There are a lot of good spiritual traits, right? There could be somebody who is generous. There could be somebody who is wise. There could be somebody who is steadfast. There could be somebody, you can give all sorts of good spiritual traits. What is it on Shaul's spiritual resume that makes Hashem say, this is the one who should be a melech?
His lineage, one of them.
So you could suggest it's the lineage. You could suggest it's the righteousness that Abarbanel pointed out already, right? The idea that even though he's young, he still controls himself. You could say that.
It's like
the Israel,
just
the best we got.
Like a
yeah, he's the last man standing. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, Sandy.
Could it be so that there's no nepotism amongst the other tribes? I think it should have been my son, and I think it should have been someone from my tribe. So this way Hashem's choosing from the smallest, the most humble, therefore they're saying, well, it must really be the will of God.
Right.
Like our Sina.
But there still have to be other people. But there still have to be other people in Binyamin. You know, it's not as though he's the only... That explains Binyamin, but it doesn't...
It sounds like he was the charismatic leader. He must have had those.
He's not going to come across as charismatic once we read his story. It's very interesting. He's kind of shy, you know, and yeah, and you'll see. And the people are going to reject him at first for it. See, you could say something completely opposite. You could say what Abarbanel notes in number 20. This is a radical statement. I don't really understand why Abarbanel says it. But he throws this in as part of his comments about Shaul. He says, "Asiba Sheni," the second out of his four reasons. "Lefisha Shemoto Bachur Shaul." His name was Shaul, which means borrowed. Right? Remember it from Chana, Alohu Shaul Lashem. "Velachein lekachawa kelius barach lemelech." That's why Hashem chose him as king. "Lehair shegava malchuso yes Shaul," to say his reign is also borrowed. "Kilo yatmid bo v'lo yikonein kiso la'ad." It's not going to last. He's on borrowed time, so to speak. That's such a strange comment, though. It doesn't fit with anything else here. Everything else is like why he's suited, and suddenly you throw in. And his name is Shaul, which says he's not going to last. Especially Abarbanel, who thought that he could have lasted. Right? Abarbanel was the one who said that it doesn't have to go back to Yehuda. So it's really striking.
Can I ask you something? So yeah. Wouldn't one imagine that Hashem would give them somebody that would succeed so that they... Because on the one hand, it seems like their emunah was faltering in God. So it could either have been on purpose to say, you didn't have enough faith in me with the system I've given you, therefore I'm letting you fail, because Hashem knows the end result. Or to say, I don't know, I've lost my train of thought. It happens.
Well, I'm gonna pick up your train of thought, because there's a particular trait that we associate with leaders Hashem chooses, And I think that's what we're looking for here. What's the story of how Moshe was selected? Don't tell me something from the source sheet. If you looked ahead, don't tell me. What do we learn? Yeah, we hear it in drushos in shul, or we pick it up in school. What do we learn as the way Moshe is selected? He cared for his people, right? The story in the Chumash about Moshe standing up for his brethren. But also there's a story. There we go. That's what I was looking for. Moshe is herding the sheep, right? Sheep, goats, animals. We live in Tehran. The little sheep that went running looking for water, and Moshe went after him and he carried him. So that seems to be what's going on here. Sensitivity to the needs of others. I brought you two midrashim. Take a look at source number 21. This is a medrash regarding the selection of Moshe as well as David. David is listed first in the medrash. Badak le David betzon umitzao roe yafeh. Hashem tested David with sheep and found him to be a good shepherd. What do you mean? So the perek ayin chet in Tehillim is a very important perek. It is a perek that lists the events of getting out of Egypt and the plagues and everything else. And at the end, it has the appointment of David as king. Vayikachehu mimichlaot tzon. Hashem selected him from the, literally, michlaot tzon, the pastures of the sheep. But the word michlaot is such an odd word. And the Medrash picks up on it. Mau mimichlaot tzon. What do you mean, from the michlaot of sheep? Kmo vayikale hageshem. Like the words vayikale hageshem after the mabul, after the flood, the rain ceased, or vayichulu hashamayim. Right, will be another, or vayikale ha'am mehavi at the Mishkan. It's a word that indicates something being finished. What does that mean here? Hayamoneya hagdolim ipnei aktanim. David, when he fed the sheep, held back the older sheep to let the younger ones drink first, or graze first. That's not drinking, it's grazing first. I'm going to say it outside because I looked at the time and realized that we're short on time. David would first have the younger ones eat the grass. They got the soft grass. Then he took out the older sheep and had them have the intermediate grass. And then he took the bahurim, the young, strong sheep, and they had to deal with the toughest of the grass. So Hashem says, oh, he's sensitive to the needs of the people and makes sure that each one gets what's appropriate for it. That's someone I want to have lead the nation. That's David. And then with Moshe, you get the story, which I only brought you a little bit of because the story is a popular story, where Hashem tests Moshe as well. Moshe is grazing the sheep of Yisro out in the Midbar, and a sheep, or a goat as it's told here, it's actually Gedi, is a goat. He's a young sheep. Ran away, and he goes after it, and he finds out that it's thirsty, and he carries it on his shoulders and brings it to drink. The Medrash is picking up on the fact that the Targ was out of its way, or Tanakh in David's case, to describe their herding activities right before they are selected. And in particular with Moshe, and we'll see it with David shortly as well, the fact that he's described as herding the sheep in the Midbar. Why would you take sheep into a Midbar to graze? That's not your best place, right? The answer is, the sheep ran away into the Midbar, and he went after it. That's what this Medrash is saying. There's a second Medrash in number 22, which I'm not going to read aloud, but you can see it there, in which we are told that Hashem tests Moshe and David, watching to see how they graze their sheep, because we are concerned about theft. The animals go grazing in other people's areas. It's going to steal their grass. And so we see them go out into the Midbar. They go out into the wilderness. Why you'd go into a wilderness? Again, in order to avoid taking from others. It's about sensitivity to either to the sheep or to other people. Think about Yehoshua. Yehoshua is selected as somebody who has ruach bo. He has spirit in him. And the Medrash there says that he understands the needs of the people and he will go out in front of them and he will bring them back. If you go forward in time to the time of Nehemiah, Nehemiah takes care of the vulnerable in his day. Nehemiah Perek, hey, the people who are indigent come to him and say, we have no money, we have been made into slaves to support ourselves. If you think about the Egla Arufa, the idea that the elders of the town are responsible for the person who passed through town and wasn't given a place to stay, or wasn't given an escort, or wasn't given food, there's a trait of sensitivity to the needs of others. Rabbi Shulam David Soloveitchik notes this in the Brisker Haggadah. He notes that if you take a look at the language in number 22, the second line in the Hebrew, in the English it's the second line also. Shnei gedolei olam shebatkan HaKadosh Baruch Hu bedavar katan. The two leaders who Hashem tested with a small matter to see how they would do. They tried to be loyal. So he asks the question. He says, why don't you test them with a big matter? Why make, give them a big test? Aaron gets 10 tests, right? Why don't you give them a big test? Tell them to do an Akedah. Why are you testing them with a small thing? And his answer is, because in dramatic moments, people will sometimes do incredible things. See how they do on a small day to day. And if they can display that kind of sensitivity there, then you know that they're good, and that's what we're going to see with Shaul. We haven't seen it yet, but the story is going to open with Shaul's family having lost some donkeys. And Shaul goes with his servant to go hunting for the donkeys. But if you jump ahead briefly, they go looking. You'll see, sentence 3, sentence 4, they go looking this place, that place, the other place, they don't find them. And then in Pasuk Hey, in sentence 5, Shaul says to the servant, L'chavan Ashuva, let's go home. Why? Not because I'm tired and annoyed that I was sent out to go looking for the donkeys, but Pen Yechdala Vimen Ha'asanos V'da'aglanu. He says, you know, Dad's going to worry. He's going to stop thinking about the donkeys. He's going to be scared about what happened to us. So let's go back. He doesn't say either, dog. We, right? About me. It's not about me. It's about us. Meaning he doesn't treat the servant as somehow being different. Dad is going to worry about you also. So that, to me, the music is great. But that, to me, is the sensitivity, and that's why Hashem selects Shaul. He picks Shaul for that trait. The nation is going to see materialism, the nation is going to see a variety of things. But Hashem has seen the sensitivity in Shaul and says, that's the one I want to be the king over the nation. We will have to say more about this, God willing, after Pesach next week. If we're meeting, it'll be Pesach Shir. I'm not quite sure yet whether we are. I'll let you know, God willing.